Okay, good evening. This is the September 7th meeting of the Planning Kitsap County Planning Commission meeting. Let's see, we will start tonight with our introductions. Let's begin with Central this time.
I'm Stephen Bowe, Central Kitsap.
All right.
Alan Beam, Central Kitsap.
All right.
Mike Eliason, Central Kitsap.
All right. And then South Kitsap.
Good evening, Stacy Smith with South Kitsap.
Terry Kaltenborn Corey, South Kitsap.
All right. And North.
Amy Mull, North Kitsap.
Aaron Murphy, North Kitsap.
And Joe Phillips, North Kitsap. With that, we will go over our virtual meeting protocol. When we are allowing the public to speak, for internet users that are using Zoom, you can use your raise hand to signal that you would like to comment. And then you will be called upon and then unmuted when your time is there. We do limit time of speaking to 2 minutes. For internet users, use your *9 on your keypad. What will happen is the last 4 digits of your phone number will show. And then when you are called upon, if you can tell your name and your first and last name. And then also remember to use *6 to unmute your phone. We do accept written comment. We ask that that be submitted the day before by 2 p.m. for this. And written comments will be read during the meeting, but they are limited to 2 minutes. So we'll try to fit that in. Please remember, general comments are not part of the public hearing. They're not part of the record for official business. When we do have a public hearing, then those will be recorded. Okay. Do I have a motion for the adoption of the agenda?
I move to adopt the agenda as presented.
Commissioner Eliason? Do I have a second? Commissioner Murphy. Okay. Any discussion on the agenda? No? Okay. All those in favor of the agenda as proposed, please raise your hands and say aye.
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 And it's unanimous. Okay. Moving on to the next one, we have agenda D, adoption of the August 17th minutes. Do I have a motion for adoption of the minutes as presented?
Move to adopt as presented.
All right, Commissioner Murphy, do I have a second?
I second it.
Commissioner Bowe, thank you. Okay, do we have any corrections or discussion on the minutes? Okay. All those in favor of adopting the minutes as presented, please raise your hands and say aye.
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 And it's unanimous. Okay. Let's see. For the next item, we have the first period of the general public comment. Do we have anybody wishing to speak? Mr. Palmer.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I've got two questions and a comment. I'll go with the comment first. At the last meeting, I asked a question of staff about incremental addition of regulations on the zoning use table update. The response I got back was from Jeff Remack that you weren't really adding anything, even though footnote got moved to a separate section and it went from 8 pages to 48 pages. And he said that was just due to renumbering. I beg to differ. I reviewed those. There's lots of new regulations in there and nobody has yet justified them. Now, my questions, this particular to the buildable lands report, my understanding is that whereas the Planning Commission is going to be apprised of the contents of that report, they have no say in the report's conclusions or recommendations. That's a problem. It's a problem not only for the Planning Commission, but it's a problem for the average citizen. My second question relates to process that sent the report, the buildable lands report, to the Department of Commerce, and whether there was any feedback from them, even though they received, according to my understanding, an incomplete report without the look back analysis, which appears to be in that which was made available to the Planning Commission tonight, but I don't know who's had a chance to review it. So other than getting a summary briefing of what's in the report, my understanding is neither the Planning Commission nor the public has any say in what the report's recommendations will be, either now or down the road when it comes time to consider the comprehensive plan update. I think that's a problem. I'm probably pretty close to my 2 minutes. But
yep. Okay, appreciate those comments, Mr. Palmer. We will move forward with that. Okay. Any other speakers that? No, I don't see any. So we will close this session of the public comment.
We do have another speaker or someone that would like to talk.
Okay. Mr. Tisdale.
Yeah, Kevin Tisdale, Chico. Can I get Mr. Palmer's contact information at some point?
Let's see. If I believe Mr. Palmer can actually chat with you on the chat bar.
Great. That's a good idea. Thank you. That was all.
Okay. All right. Mr. Palmer, did you have a problem?
In case the chat function didn't work, I was going to give him my email address.
You can do that quickly.
It's wpconslts@telebyte. telebyte.net.
Okay. All right. With that done, we will move on to the work study for the buildable lands report. Ms. Williams.
All right, thank you. I'm gonna go ahead and share my screen here really quick. Are you all seeing the slides come up? All right, I'm seeing yeses. All right. So for the record, my name is Liz Williams. I'm the interim program manager for Kitsap County Department of Community Development, Planning and Environmental Programs Division. So tonight, DCD team is here to provide an overview of the draft buildable lands report, which was released for public review and comment on August 21st. There is a slide later on in the presentation, which will overview the public participation options for submitting public comment related to this report. So in response to Mr. Palmer's inquiry this evening, we are in an active public comment period on this draft report. In addition, the draft report that was released on August 20th also was transmitted to the Department of Commerce, as we've been keeping them up to date on our process since our grant obligation has concluded with them on June 30th of this year. Prior to kind of diving into the discussion, I just wanted to remind everyone on the purpose and scope of the Buildable Lands Report, which is to look back at development trends between 2013 and 2019 to review if actual development is occurring as planned in Kitsap's countywide planning policies, in addition to local comprehensive plans. The report also looks forward to determine if there is adequate land supply in urban areas to accommodate future population and employment growth that's anticipated between 2020 and 2036. Finally, if any inconsistencies are identified as part of the look back review of development trends and the look forward evaluation of future land supply, the report identifies reasonable measures that could be considered as part of future updates to the comprehensive plan and development regulations to better align with local policies and plans. So since October of 2020, the department has provided regular briefings on the status and components of the draft buildable lands report. Tonight, we will cover achieved density for both residential and employment development trends between 2013 and 2019, and a summary of residential and employment capacity to accommodate the remaining targets. You may recall that this report is not like other typical items that is reviewed by the Planning Commission and does not require a formal recommendation. However, the Buildable Lands Report, as we've mentioned, is one of the first steps the county and local cities within take prior to completing a periodic update to the comprehensive plan, which for Kitsap is due on or before June 30th of 2024. So this slide here just provides an overall view of what we've covered to date. Since October, we've focused primarily on kind of the update process, public participation opportunities, in addition to a summary of the land capacity analysis or the forward-looking review at future land supply. In addition to looking at recommended market factor ranges. And then finally, on July 20th, we provided an overview of the 2013 to 2019 population and employment growth trends, which is part of the draft report as well. So in addition to the items that we reviewed with the Planning Commission to date, we also wanted to provide a quick overview of what is new as part of this buildable lands report compared to previous. So since the last buildable lands report, jurisdictions have been required to update their critical areas ordinances or CAO. This occurs every 8 years to account for best available science. And the last update to local CAOs was completed in 2017, which was during this report's evaluation period. Similarly, with stormwater requirements based upon Washington State Department of Ecology's 2012 National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System, or NPDES, phase two permits, we updated and modified our local regulations there during the evaluation period as well. In addition, infrastructure gaps and analysis. In 2017, the legislative changes required jurisdictions to complete a formal evaluation of infrastructure gaps and their effect on urban growth capacity based on existing capital facilities plans. So we did review that programmatic infrastructure gap review with the Planning Commission at previous briefings. In addition, market factor or unavailable land assumptions. So again, in 2017, legislative changes called for a more rigorous approach to developing market factor assumptions. The changes were intended to account for reductions in the amount of land that is suitable for residential and employment development activities. In previous buildable lands reports, the market factor was used to estimate kind of parcels that would be expected to remain undeveloped or unavailable due to owner preferences or some type of legal encumbrance. And under the new legislation, a wider range of factors that may block or severely inhibit market availability were to be considered. So as a result, the market factor assumptions used in this BLR are not directly comparable to previous buildable lands reports. In addition, achieved employment density, previous buildable lands reports, they reported on non-residential permit activity, but not on achieved employment densities. So consistent with Commerce's 2018 guidance, this BLR details achieved floor area ratio or the lot area that is dedicated to a building footprint. For non-residential developments, so commercial and industrial development activities. And then finally, reasonable measures. In 2017, legislative changes also added additional points of analysis where jurisdictions needed to consider reasonable measures. So under past buildable lands reports, jurisdictions experiencing any inconsistencies were expected to adopt reasonable measures. But under the 2017 legislation, jurisdictions that are not on track to achieve their growth targets or allowed densities would also be required to adopt reasonable measures to overcome these circumstances, in addition to using three different tests to help evaluate whether reasonable measures may be needed as part of future comprehensive plan and development regulation updates. So we'll cover that. Those consistency checks towards the end of this particular presentation. Were there any questions on those two components before I dive into our discussion and start talking about achieved density across unincorporated Kitsap County? Not seeing any.
Hey Liz, we did have a chat from Martha out in the audience there about the 2020 date. And I think you were going over the look back, look forward image there and just clarification that, again, part of the analysis is kind of a three-parter, if you will. So you're looking at development trends through the course of 2013 to 2019 and then looking forward that land supply, making assumptions associated with that. And then I don't want to ruin the rest of the presentation. So just wanted to speak to that because we did get a chat in the window there.
Thank you. I appreciate you monitoring that as I'm presenting and let me know if I miss another one there that needs to be clarified. So to kick off the discussion, we'll begin by taking a look at achieved density across unincorporated Kitsap County during the evaluation period. So this is the look back evaluation of actual development that has occurred between 2013 and 2019. So we will be presenting both unincorporated urban growth areas in addition to achieved densities in for rural lands located in unincorporated Kitsap County. We report in the draft achieved density in two ways. The first is achieved density of building permits issued on existing lots. and achieve density of plats or new lots that are created during the evaluation period, which may or may not have been issued a building permit during this time. So the graph here presents compares achieved densities with the minimum and maximum allowed density for each zone. I've highlighted the column here that is looking at achieved density by each zone, and then the minimum and maximum allowed ranges are to the right of that blue column. In total, the county issued 1,043 permits for new housing units during the evaluation period, including 100 multifamily units and 5 accessory dwelling units. All zones, except for the urban low and urban medium zones, were within the range of allowed densities, which is an improvement from the previous buildable lands report. I'll also mention that the mixed use zone was removed in 2016, halfway through the evaluation period, but it also had an achieved density below the minimum density range. But since it's no longer an existing zone, that was not evaluated for reasonable measures. So the next slide here summarizes plat activity and achieve plat density across the county urban growth areas for unincorporated land. In total, Kitsap County approved 30 plats for a total of 780 new lots. This was a slight decrease from the previous evaluation period, which indicated there were 32 plats issued, creating a total of 1,861 new lots. All zones with residential plat activity achieved the minimum allowed density during the evaluation period. This is an improvement from the previous buildable lands report, which found that the urban low zone had an achieved density of 4.25 housing units per acre. In addition, the urban medium and urban high zones achieved a net density above the allowed minimum density range. This is also an improvement from the previous evaluation period, which found that the urban high zone had an achieved net density that was below the minimum allowed. So much like building permits issued, the report also evaluates plat activity for each urban growth area. However, the previous buildable lands report did not break down plat activity by urban growth area. So it wasn't, we weren't able to compare, you know, how those plats resulted by an urban growth area by urban growth area standpoint. So just wanted to mention that these two slides are showing an overview of the county zones, but the report itself also breaks down each urban growth area and shows the building permits issued by zone in that area in addition to the plats issued. But we're reporting on a summary tonight. So any questions on urban achieved densities?
Okay, just a real quick one. Green belts were developed?
The green Ilahi Greenbelt Zone is located within the Central Kitsap Urban Growth Area, Commissioner Phillips.
Okay.
So just shorthand, Greenbelt Zone is often what it's called. The density range allowed within the Central Kitsap area, typically the Ilahi watershed area, is 1 up to 4 dwelling units an acre. There was a community planning effort that was adopted, I want to say 2006, that originally established, or actually afterwards, 2012. Roughly, that adopted that community plan, but also this new particular zone.
Okay, I was just curious of, you say green belt, that usually doesn't mean we're developing it.
Correct.
Yep.
Okay, any other questions? Commissioner Murphy.
Ms. Williams, can you go back one slide for a moment?
To the plat?
Yeah, and then I'll have you hop for it again in a second. So urban medium residential is the first one where I see a real underachieving category in the 2 versus 10 minimum. And then when you go, and I don't want to pick on mixed use particularly, just because that's probably the most varied type of, right? Tough to even calculate how two are the same. But if we take urban medium to the next slide, we also see 9.3 being under 10. So is it that urban medium as a zone in general that we are finding those are plats with wetlands nearby and there's a loss of land? Or tell me what you saw as commonality in the urban medium, because I had a feeling that was an area that we were looking to get better production out of as far as creating doors for affordable housing. So what did you see?
Yeah, so in that particular zone, there were a combination of things occurring. For permits issued, again, these are existing lots that could have been platted, you know, under a different zoning or prior to the Growth Management Act, which then would lead to, you know, the achieved density maybe not aligning with the current allowed densities within the ranges. So I know that was the case for existing permitted building permits that were issued on existing lots. When it came to plats, there's two ways that Kitsap County Code kind of evaluates or measures density. And so for all zones where there's a maximum density, maximum allowed density is calculated on gross acreage of the site. And then in all zones where there's a minimum density required, minimum density is calculated on net developable acreage. So in this case, if you look at net developable acreage, it is in line with our allowed density ranges and is likely what was evaluated to approve that plat during the evaluation period, where you're seeing probably, as you mentioned, encumbrances from critical areas, because gross achieved density would not take out critical areas or right-of-way dedications, things like that. It's taking a look at the overall site acreage to come up with that calculation. But when you do take out right-of-way or critical areas, you will see that it is achieving the minimum allowed density for that zone.
Would the preference, and I know you're speculating at this point, would the preference be that we were landing in the middle between 10 and 18? Like, what can we be thinking about so that we're not hitting minimums when we're trying to, you know, kind of densify in the areas that make sense to densify? What can we be doing better either in what is allowed, or what can the developer be doing better in design to hit middle, like a 14, 15 in this category?
Yeah, I think you'll see in future slides some of the considerations related to reasonable measures, specifically to wanting to encourage multifamily housing development within the county. So considerations like the zoning use table update to remove barriers to different housing product types across various zones in the county, in addition to taking a look at parking requirements, site design requirements, performance-based development requirements, lot size setback requirements, all of those considerations to help further encourage and align the development activity that we're seeing with our planned and allowed ranges. So those are just a few of the things that we'll talk about this evening and that are highlighted in the report that we can focus on as part of future code updates and or comprehensive plan amendments to help address these inconsistencies.
Thank you, Ms. Williams. And Ms. Silver was smirking as if I had crystal balled my way ahead in the slide deck. So I'll be quiet so you can actually present whatever it is.
I'm just assuming you read the report and you know exactly what it says.
You do have a crystal ball, Commissioner Murphy.
Just data instincts, I suppose.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Great questions. Any others? All right, so I'm going to move on to achieve density for rural lands. So the next two slides will focus on this, and I'm going to kind of go back and forth because I wasn't able to fit the building permits issued on one slide, because this does also capture, in addition to the rural zones, our limited areas of more intensive rural development, or the LAMRDs. So just to kind of, for context, rural lands in unincorporated Kitsap County occupies about 74% of the peninsula's 396 square miles. The findings indicate that during the evaluation period, rural lands accounted for 1,712 new housing units. This is a decrease from previous evaluation period, which found that 1,758 new housing units were permitted between 2006 and 2012. The overall achieved densities in rural zones were higher than the planned rural densities, and the overall achieved density by zone has all improved, though, since the previous buildable lands report. The exception to this is the rural wooded zone, where achieved densities were higher since the last buildable lands report, and this increase is attributed to building permits that were issued during the evaluation period on a large development referred to as White Horse, that through a variety of legal challenges was vested to and had been approved under the county's pre-GMA regulations. So therefore is seeing higher than allowed density ranges because of that vesting. So again, just taking a look here, achieved density or unit per acre compared to the maximum allowed density in the zone. In the rural areas, there is no minimum allowed density. And again, these are our LAMRD zones. You'll see that the Manchester Village low residential zone did see building permits issued within the range here. All right, and then from plat standpoint, there were 55 new plats issued in the rural area that contained a total of 240 new lots. This is an increase from the previous buildable lands report, which reported 7 plats between 2006 and 2012 that created a total of 180 rural lots. All plats were within the allowed density range with the exception of the rural residential zone. However, there were, is a story behind this. So there were 4 new plats that were previously located in an urban growth area and had vested to urban densities that were later removed from the urban growth area following a 2012 Growth Management Hearing Board's remand order. So if these plats were removed from the rural residential zone calculations, the achieved gross density would be would go from 1.5 dwelling units per 5 acres to 1 unit per 5 acres, which is consistent with the allowed density in that zone. So any questions on rural achieved density? I'm not seeing any, so I'm going to move us right along. So the following slides summarize employment or commercial and industrial development activity between 2013 and 2019 for both unincorporated urban and rural areas. So this slide is taking a look at the urban achieved floor area ratio, which is again the amount of land area that is dedicated to the building itself. So kind of think of it almost as a percent of lot coverage, or at least that's how I try to think of it in my own mind. We don't currently regulate our commercial or industrial development here in Kitsap County by floor area ratio. And as I mentioned earlier in the presentation, presentation. This is a new requirement as part of the legislative changes in 2017. So the analysis does break down development activity by vacant sites, which is on the bottom here, and then previously developed sites, which previously developed already had an existing structure on it prior to 2013, and vacant, you know, had no existing development prior to the evaluation period. So achieved floor area ratio was calculated based on total improvement square footage and total site area. And since this is the first time that the county has been required to report this, we don't really have a comparison to draw from the previous evaluation. However, the totals are in line with the recommended assumptions for the forward-looking land capacity analysis, which we've shared with the Planning Commission previously. So here's the totals for the urban zones, or sorry, urban growth areas. And then here's a look at achieved floor area ratio, again, by previously developed sites. These are the limited areas of more intensive rural development, and then vacant sites. So there were just a small amount of development activity in unincorporated rural zones, and then the remaining development was in those limited areas of more intensive rural development. All right, any questions on achieved employment density? Okay. All right. So now that we've reviewed achieved densities, the next step in the buildable lands program is to determine capacity of land suitable, in this case, for residential growth within the current planning horizon, which goes from 2020 to 2036, at least for this forward-looking analysis for this report. So in terms of a summary, as of January of 2020, the remainder of the growth target, there is sufficient land to accommodate planned residential growth. But in urban, unincorporated urban areas, we are falling short by about 7,662 people, given kind of the remaining target that needs to be accommodated by 2036. However, if you take into account both the city and unincorporated urban growth areas, there is sufficient capacity to meet the 2036 target. Specifically, there is a overage of approximately 16,654 people that could be accommodated beyond the remaining 2036 growth target. But did want to note that for the unincorporated urban growth areas, the land capacity analysis did indicate that there were deficiencies in many of the geographies. So any questions on that one?
I think it's looking at land supply or capacity in the various unincorporated UGAs, I think it's also important when they were originally sized in 2016 as part of that periodic update. For example, I'm going to pick on Port Orchard UGA. So we're looking as based upon some new statutory changes and a new run on land supply, we're short to accommodate a little over 2,000 people in that particular UGA. But when that UGA was originally sized in 2016, that UGA was 1,500 people shy of accommodating that growth. And that was a back and forth with the city jurisdiction as it is an associated UGA with the city of Port Orchard. So just knowing kind of a little nuance there that some of these UGAs were undersized as part of their sizing in 2016, and you're seeing a little bit nuance in the new land capacity runs.
Commissioner Eliason, did you have a question?
No, I did not.
Okay.
I'm certain I probably confused everyone, so I'm happy to answer any questions anyone may have.
All All right. So similar to the residential capacity, the following slide does present a summary of employment capacity as of January 2020 for each of the unincorporated urban growth areas with a comparison to the remaining growth target through 2036. So similar to the unincorporated urban residential capacity results, employment capacity in unincorporated UGAs fell short by about 1,792 jobs to accommodate the remaining 12,811 job target. However, again, countywide, when you take into account the associated cities, there is employment capacity of approximately 38,000 jobs compared to the target, which is just over 33,000 jobs to 2036. So again, I think the same thing here is true related to the previous sizing of urban growth areas. I believe we mentioned Silverdale and the Central Kitsap urban growth area were already undersized as part of that previous update process. All right. Any questions on employment capacity? Otherwise, I'll move us to reasonable measures. So reasonable measures are those actions necessary to reduce the difference between actual development trends and targets contained in the countywide planning policies and local comprehensive plans. So counties and cities must identify reasonable measures other than adjusting urban growth areas if inconsistencies are found. And the reasonable measures process would be considered as part of future comprehensive plan updates to reconcile those inconsistencies. For this report in particular, there were three consistency checks that were performed to evaluate the need to identify reasonable measures. And these questions included, is the rate of population and employment growth consistent with the 2036 growth targets? Are achieved residential densities consistent with allowed densities? And is there capacity to accommodate the remaining 2036 population and employment growth targets? So chapter five breaks down the evaluation of reasonable measures and walks through these consistency checks. And just to kind of summarize considerations there, the recommendations are to continue to monitor the maximum lot size and recent director's interpretation regarding minimum density. So this really speaks to the urban low zone and inconsistencies identified there. As part of the 2016 comprehensive plan update, footnote 25 was adopted, which is referred to as the maximum lot size requirement. And then in, I believe it was 2017, 2018, Angie, that the director's interpretation was approved. That also provided further clarification that regardless of the lot size, minimum density still applies to all buildings permits. So that is one recommendation to continue to monitor it, that because both of those measures were implemented during this evaluation period, and it's still too early to understand exactly what their effect will be moving forward.
The director's interpretation for minimum density, regardless of the subdivision maximum lot size, was issued March of 2020. Okay. So outside of the permit evaluation of 2013 to 2019. And the footnote 25, I think some of the folks that have been on the Planning Commission in a while, I want to look at Commissioner Murphy as well as Chairman Phillips. I think that went through the Planning Commission as a revision in 2018, mm-hmm. I recall, and that was That's shortly right. after the 2016 major update, which included it, but it was very ambiguous and unclear and triggered a Second Amendment process on that.
Thank you. And then other recommendations, again, are to continue to remove barriers to a variety of housing products and investment within our urban growth areas. So a lot of the recommendations that are considered as part of the zoning use table update would help to speak to allowing and removing barriers to a variety of housing types across zones in urban areas. In addition to, as we mentioned earlier, to Commissioner Murphy's question, taking a look and exploring and continuing to remove barriers to multifamily housing, density, dimensional design standards, and parking requirements are ways that we can further encourage achieving our planned densities. In addition to exploring and evaluating rural development standards to address some of the inconsistencies identified there as part of this evaluation period. So at this point, those are the current considerations, and those will be further evaluated as part of future code development projects and or comprehensive plan update processes. So any questions on reasonable measures?
Commissioner Lyson.
Quickly, are any of the director interpretations currently under appeal?
No.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Commissioner Beam.
Are all the director's interpretations readily published and readily available?
Yes, and I can put in the chat window where they're available on the department's main website.
Thank you.
Okay. And I believe we've answered at least the questions at this time.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Williams.
Yeah, I just want to quickly wrap up with a couple more points, sorry. So just kind of where we're at in the timeline. Again, we're looking to wrap this project up by October. We're currently in a public comment period, which extends to September 21st. If you're interested in submitting public comment, there is information available on our project website. In addition to on the slide here, you can submit comment online via an electronic form. You can also email buildablelands@co.kitsap.wa.us and provide your comments and recommendations. Or you can mail those into the department at our mailing address here, 614 Division Street, Mail Stop 36, Port Orchard, Washington, 98366. And as I mentioned, public comment period wraps up on September 21st, and then the county and cities will respond to public comment. We have received a handful of public comments to date, and we'll continue to monitor and respond to those as they come in. And then in October, our goal is to wrap up and finalize the buildable lands report. And as I did mention, we did transmit this draft to Department of Commerce and have indicated that we will provide them with the final draft as well. To date, they have not provided any feedback on the draft to the county or cities. And that concludes my presentation for tonight. I'm happy to answer any final questions. Otherwise, thank you for your time.
Okay. Do we have any final questions? Commissioner Eliason.
Mr. Palmer has mentioned in recent meetings his concerns, although he wasn't too specific this evening. But I just want to confirm that the BLR, there is no statutory requirement nor an agency directive that local government must have the BLR under the purview and jurisdiction of the Planning Commission. Is that not correct? So it's up to the county commissioners to decide the level of involvement of its Planning Commission.
That is my understanding of the statutory requirements, that this is a report out and information that then helps inform future comprehensive plan update processes.
Great, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. And Commissioner Beam.
I'm having a trouble with the concept of employment density.
Welcome to the club.
can you explain it to me? There's several things I'm concerned about. If you're talking about employment density in Kitsap County and you're not counting military and you're not counting the shipyard, I don't think we're doing anything valid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's an important local circumstance to really take into consideration on the nuance of the data that's informing the results here.
You're not accounting the biggest employer in the county.
Right. And it's unfortunately a limitation to the data available at the level that we are analyzing, analyzing this particular report. And, you know, we do try to throughout nuance and mention that it does have an impact on a lot of the jurisdictions, the city of Bremerton in particular, our urban growth area there, in addition to Silverdale with its proximity to Bangor base. So, you know, it is a significant limitation. And I do think that there are ways over time that we can look at and hone how we're evaluating that. But at this point, we had to use the best available data that we had to help inform and answer the questions that we've been asked to answer. But it is an important nuance to keep in mind that the numbers that you're seeing do not account for military employment here in the county.
And then the other issue is the commuters. We have a significant amount of commuters that go in and out of here. I don't think they're accounted for either. I just don't think we're talking real employment. We're talking a phony number here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know that it is a new requirement that, you know, the county has been asked to report on. And at this point, you know, employment density, we've taken a look at how much new building coverage or how much new building improvements have been developed during the evaluation period to kind of get at the achieved floor area ratio. That's one method that can be used by jurisdictions in addition to others, but just based on the available data that we have at this time, we decided to take a look at achieved floor area ratio.
I think for commuter employment information, again, if it's part of the other Bilba Lands jurisdictions that are required to do this, that's part of their assessment as well. So for example, in previous presentations, we've highlighted other counties and cities required to do this analysis, which is Whatcom, Pierce, King, Snohomish.
Thurston.
Sorry, I'm trying to pull it out of my brain. So they would be considering those things as part of their employment review of the Bilba Lands report. And again, I agree with Liz, we struggled with this new concept of employment densities and how it was described in Commerce's guidelines they issued after the statute changed in 2017. So this is definitely a new concept for us. What that means, because again, just even throwing density to it, I don't consider jobs density, but we're rolling with the punches.
Okay. Commissioner Smith.
Yeah, so thank you for bringing this up, because I feel like I'm drinking through a fire hose going through all of this information for the first time. So thank you for walking us through this. I just wonder, you know, 2020, 2021, it's been such a weird year. We have COVID, we have commuters, we have people working from home that never have. We have people who have left the employment altogether. And then we have concerns of trying to fill jobs today. You can, you know, talk to most small businesses and they're struggling. And so I guess my question is maybe a comment. This buildable lands report, I know you use the data you have, you do the best you can. When does it get revised? Because I'm thinking we live in a world where we've never lived before. So that's
yeah. So this will be looked at as part of the 2024 comp plan update when it goes to taking considerations for urban growth area sizing. So there will be some work at that time to take a look at, you know, the assumptions and how this informs urban growth areas. And then the next buildable lands report out will, oh boy, I don't even want to think about that date right now, but it will be 3 years before our next comprehensive plan update. So it is an iterative cycle that's done every 6 years to evaluate kind of where we're at with development trends, and then again, helping to inform future planning across the jurisdiction as well. So
I believe this is the fourth Bilba Lands report issued by Kitsap County and the cities within, since this was included in the Growth Management Act, I want to say
97.
So thank you. So this last go around in 2017 was probably the first major overhaul of that statutory commitment. Mm-hmm. So a lot of us were walking through and how to apply these new ideas and concepts as part of meeting our minimum requirements under this GMA. So I think if I had to do the math, if 3 years before our next comp plan and our next major update is due 2024, that would be the next one would be 2032. So a couple of years before that would be the next report issuance.
Well, hopefully we're back to some normalcy by then.
I think it would be a completely different world in 2032 or whatever the year may be. So if we're flying around in spaceships, sweet.
Okay. All right. Any last questions or comments? No? Okay, Ms. Williams, thank you for that update. Next on our agenda is the work study for the zoning use table update. See, Mr. Gurney's down for it, but...
Yeah, between Ms. Silva and myself, we're going to pinch hit tonight. Okay. But I'm going to ask, if possible, Amanda, would it be appropriate for us to take a short break quick to pause the recording?
I think that'd be good.
Okay.
Okay. So I have 6:26. So let's do a 10-minute break or come back at 6:36.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.